For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has formally declared victory over the Islamic State in Mosul. The U.S.-led coalition warns lots of fighting remains. Our Washington correspondent Giles Gibson has an update.
In a speech on state television, Iraq's Prime Minister announced, quote, the end and the failure and the collapse of the Islamic State. Meanwhile, the U.S.-led coalition congratulated Prime Minister al-Abadi on the, quote, historic victory against a brutal and evil enemy. The battle for Mosul has left vast areas of the city in ruins, as well as thousands of civilians dead. And as the fighting finally draws to a close, officials from the United Nations are warning that a humanitarian crisis is just beginning. Giles Gibson, Washington.
The High Court in the United Kingdom has ruled that British sales to Saudi Arabia can continue. The decision is a blow to campaigners who had challenged the trade. From London, Malcolm Brown reports.
Campaigners had argued that Saudi Arabia's actions at the head of a coalition fighting in Yemen should have triggered a halt to British arms exports to the kingdom. At issue was whether there was a clear risk that the weapons might be used to commit serious violations of international humanitarian law. Relying in part on evidence presented in secret for national security reasons, the judges accepted that the government acted rationally in allowing the sales to go ahead. The Campaign Against Arms Trade called the verdict very disappointing and is promising to appeal. Malcolm Brown, London.
Popular London tourist attraction, the Camden Lock Market, has burned. Ollie Barrett has an update.
70 firefighters and 10 fire engines were deployed to the building, which contains several businesses. Police and ambulances also arrived, but no injuries were reported. Emergency services say they were called to reports of a fire around midnight local time, and the fire was brought under control several hours later. Ollie Barrett, London.
U.S. President Donald Trump is also under fire in a different way for his son's meeting last summer with a Russian attorney, for attacking fired FBI Director James Comey on Twitter, and for allowing his daughter Ivanka to briefly take his seat at the G20 summit at the weekend. From Washington, our correspondent Harry Horton reports.
Ms. Trump did not appear to make any major contributions to the discussion about African migration and health, but the president's absence would traditionally be covered by a high-ranking official. Ivanka Trump serves as an unpaid White House advisor to the president, although her exact role is unclear. Harry Horton, Washington.
Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko wants to discuss how his nation can join NATO. Russia, which maintains troops in Ukraine, rejects the move, saying, quote, it will not boost stability or security in the European continent. This is FSN.
Thank you very much, Priscilla Huff. Thank you indeed. And a warm welcome to the program to you. It's Monday. And it's a lovely evening. It's been a brutal day here, weather-wise, in the northwest, but a lovely evening it's developed into. Hope your weekend was good. The Twitter is open to you now. Well, it's always open to you, but you can tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Monday's program is going to be a good one, I think. Let's do it then.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
I'm looking forward to welcoming back Eric T. Karlstrom to the show. Dr. Eric T. Karlstrom was on the program about 4 months ago, did terrifically well. We really liked him a lot, and he's back today. He's an emeritus professor of geography at California State University. We'll be talking about a lot of different things in an extended conversation. Who and what is behind the climate change agenda, gang stalking, mind control and more. Eric's websites are www.911nwo.com and gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. Eric joins us in about a half an hour's time, and he'll be with me until the end of the program. And you can tweet him through me to ask him questions. I think you're going to like Eric T. Karlstrom again. He's back on the program. Alrighty. Yeah, good stuff. Had a good old day today. Drove up to Burnley, near Burnley anyway, to meet with my friend and colleague Aaron Calland. And when I set off today, the weather was horrendous. I don't know if you've ever driven before when the rain is so heavy that it's not clearing the windshield or the windscreen. It was one of those in the first 15 minutes, precarious driving conditions this morning. And of course, we had the heroes, didn't we? The Monkey Men. We had the Monkey Men tailgating at 70 miles per hour in treacherous conditions in the fast lane. Lunatics driving up behind one another, flashing the lights in biblical rain. Spooky enough, you know, I've been driving in difficult conditions. I drove in Spain for years. I know how bad driving is there. This isn't racist. It isn't. My Spanish friends, if they were here, they would tell you. But spooky enough this morning it was. Anyway, good to be with you. We're broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Tune in radio, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, of course, and my own website as well. And I'm in good form. I'm always in good form on Monday. I'm one of those Monday guys. I like Mondays. No problem with Monday. Well. Shock, horror, outrage. A dull Monday. And a dull Monday news day was livened up by the MP Anne Marie Morris. I bet you've heard of Anne Marie Morris now. I bet you've been listening to the radio and the television. Anne Marie Morris. She said the N-word. She said the N-word. And this is, well, this is Sky News. They're shocked. Everybody is shocked.
Good afternoon, you're watching Sky News at 5. We start with some breaking news, and there are calls for the Conservative Party to remove the whip from the backbench MP Anne Marie Morris after she was recorded using the N-word at a meeting of Eurosceptics. This is the audio recording of what happened.
And then we get to the pile of news in 2 years. What happened? This never is no deal.
Well, in the last hour, a Labour MP raised the issue of racism with the Prime Minister in the Commons.
Very much, Mr. Speaker. Not all G20 countries have made the same sort of progress we've made in this country in relation to racist and discriminatory language. Was that an issue she discussed with the G20 leaders? And does she agree that where that happens, organisations should take decisive and swift action?
I have to say to the Honourable Gentleman that I think it is beholden on us all to ensure that we use appropriate language at all times.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Now, the N-word. Why did they say the N-word? We'll come back to that in a minute. So, she has been suspended since I recorded that report. She has, in fact, had the whip withdrawn from her, meaning she's been suspended because she used a racist expression during a discussion about Brexit in public. She's the MP for Newton Abbott, Anne Marie Morris. The event was in London and she was describing the prospect of the UK leaving the EU without a deal. So she used a racial slur. N-word. And they beep it out all the time in the reports. Why did they do that? We'll come back to that in a few minutes. Was there a reaction from MPs across the House? Well, members of Parliament couldn't wait to get to Twitter.
And there's been angry reaction from MPs on social media following the revelation of Anne Marie Morris's remark. The former Shadow Business Secretary Chukwuemeka tweeted, speechless, not just at the remark being made, but also at the reported lack of reaction from the Tories there. Utterly appalling. Green Party co-leader Caroline Lucas tweeted, appalling, should have the whip removed immediately. No place in our politics for racism, full stop. Labour MP Tulip Siddique tweeted, I'm absolutely appalled by this. I assume the PM will take appropriate action.
Everybody's appalled. Of course, there was huge reaction to this. Holier-than-thou MPs couldn't wait to get to their Twitter accounts. Now, she was speaking at this meeting in London and suggesting that just 7% of financial services would be affected by Brexit. She reportedly said, now, I am sure there will be many people who will challenge that, but my response and my request is, look at the detail. It isn't all doom and gloom. She went on. And this is where she got herself into trouble. She said, now we get to the real nigger in the woodpile, which is in 2 years what happens if there is no deal. Now, the Huffington Post reported today the phrase she used originated in the deep south of the US in the mid-19th century, and it's thought to have meant slaves concealing themselves as they were looking to flee north and secure their freedom, hiding in woodpiles. It was subsequently, continues the Huffington Post, used in the last century, including by a number of leading novelists, as a metaphor to describe a hidden fact or problem. The N-word. Why can't we say the word? I mean, it's a word that's been around for centuries now in different forms, of course. Do you think if a TV reporter says, imagine if the TV presenter said, welcome to the program, an MP used the word nigger today. Do you think that black people are going to collapse? That they'll be so injured by it that their heads will explode? Doing a bit of research into the word, it originated as a neutral term referring to people with black skin. It comes from negro, of course, the Spanish and Portuguese noun meaning the colour black. That's where it originally came from. But of course, it became a racist slur. Indeed, it did become a very offensive word for black people. Using it, calling a black person a nigger, and why would you want to do that, is a nasty thing to do because of the connotations of the word, obviously. Slavery, the horrors of slavery. And it's inexcusable to call somebody that. I'm not talking about that. Why would you use that? Why would you say that word? You wouldn't. You would never. I suppose some people would never call a black person a nigger, but probably would use the word. I'm sure there are people like that who wouldn't say it to somebody's face, but they would use it anyway. I wouldn't. I don't use the word. I don't say offensive terms like paki. I wouldn't use the word kike, which is a very old racial slur for Jewish people. Spick, wetback, coon. There's many of these phrases, these words that were used throughout history that you should not use to refer to somebody. You shouldn't use those words to refer to anybody. I don't think you should anyway. Those are nasty words with nasty connotations. But they are words that were used historically. You know, when somebody uses those words in a way we don't think appropriate, when we report that in the news, why can't we use the actual word? It's a kind of political correct madness, I think, isn't it? Why wouldn't the news report reflect that in the story? Like the reason why the word is offensive. That's good, isn't it? That would be the appropriate way to do the news story. I'm going to be Kay Birdie for a minute. Anne-Marie Morris has come under fire today for using the word nigger when telling a committee meeting that the financial services sector is going to be hit by Brexit. Then the next few lines from Kay Birdie could be explaining the origin of the word, where it came from, and why the word is offensive to black people. Wouldn't that be logical? But to be frightened of a few letters put together to form a word, and not to use that word, and to use ridiculous analogies, if that's the right word, the N-word. Now, I'm not saying somebody, when describing the C-word, should say the C-word. But then maybe I'm a hypocrite if I say that. Anyway, I think it's absolutely ludicrous. She's been suspended by it. What makes me laugh is the holier-than-thou MPs, many of whom support selling arms to Yemen, to Saudi Arabia, to bomb into oblivion men, women and children who never bothered anybody. People who support heinous causes like that get offended on behalf of other people. Let black men and women come and say, hey, listen, don't be using that word. You know, it's not a good word. I have no problem with that. But to see, you know, Tim Farron and Caroline Lucas piss off and give me a break. Horrible people. They couldn't care less. Just an excuse to jump on social media and to jump onto a cause. If any of my black listeners want to weigh in on this, please do tweet at Richie Allen Show and tell me what you think. It's exactly 14 minutes past the hour. Now, the campaign against arms trade brought the UK government to the High Court, claiming the UK-Saudi Arabian arms deal was illegal on the basis the arms were being used to slaughter Yemenis. The BBC reporting, thus, this is the BBC report. UK government arms sales to Saudi Arabia are lawful, the High Court has ruled after seeing secret evidence. The court rejected campaigners' claims ministers were acting illegally by not suspending weapon sales to the kingdom, which is fighting a war in Yemen. Typical BBC bullshit there. It's not fighting a war in Yemen at all, Saudi Arabia. It's carpet bombing. It's a school bully, 6'5" tall, who's in 11th year, beating up a child who's 2 foot tall in second fucking year. They're not fighting a war in Yemen. They're murdering people. And the United Nations has said that thousands and thousands of civilians have died. But the judges in the High Court said, no, we've seen some secret evidence, mind you. Mind you, we've seen some secret evidence, old boy. And we're going to say it's lawful. It's lawful. Lord Justice Burnett and Mr. Justice Haddon Cave, sitting in London, said the decision was lawful. We saw some closed material, dear boy, which hasn't been made public for national security reasons. And we conclude that it's lawful. Here is Joe Lowe. Now, Joe Lowe represents the Campaign Against Arms Trade. He's speaking with RT after the verdict.
Obviously, we're very disappointed. We're very disappointed on the behalf of the people of Yemen, where, you know, the Saudi forces have been flying UK-made planes. They've been dropping UK-made bombs. And that's led to a country where 7 million people are on the edge of starvation, where there's a cholera outbreak, where, you know, the Saudis have been bombing funerals, 140 people killed. They've been bombing mosques. They've been bombing hospitals. They've been declaring entire cities a military target. So we're very disappointed and we're very angry, and we'll be appealing the judgment and, you know, hoping for a better result next time. What the law says is quite clear. It says if there's a clear risk of serious violations of international humanitarian law, then those arms should not be exported to that country. And, you know, from what I can see and from what the vast majority of the British public can see, there's a very clear risk that these weapons have been used to violate international humanitarian law. You know, the arms industry has a big lobbying budget. It uses it very effectively. There's also the revolving door between the government and the arms industry. You know, you've got top civil servants in the MOD, you've got top ambassadors, you've got top figures in the military, you've got ministers of defence all getting jobs in the arms industry once they retire. And that kind of pro-arms industry whole idea in the government is what we're fighting against, so what needs to end if we're ever going to have an ethical foreign policy.
Very well spoken there, Joe Lowe. The sickening thing about this is not only do you have defence ministers. Now, ministers are numerate. There is a defence secretary, which is the top job. The Secretary of Defence. It's David Lidington now. No, it isn't. What's wrong with me? It's Michael Fallon. David Lidington is Justice. Michael Fallon is the UK Defence Secretary. But he will have ministers working for him. And when they leave government, they go and work within the arms industry for many of these heinous companies. And it goes the other way as well. These people get positions in government. They get positions as special advisors to governmental committees. But not only that, a lot of them end up in the House of Lords. It's pretty sickening, isn't it? It's pretty sickening. The idea that Saudi Arabia are at war with Yemen is a joke. It's disgusting, it's psychotic, but it doesn't matter because the High Court said it's lawful. I'll tell you what, dear listener, it's lawful to sell arms to psychopaths who murder hundreds of thousands of people. And you know they're going to do that when you give them the weapons. You know, if I had a gun, and I don't, I have no time for weapons, I would never own a gun. But if I had one and I sold it for 50 quid to Billy No Mates across the road, who is a known schizophrenic, and Billy decides to kill his neighbour or his wife or his brother or somebody, I am rightly culpable, and I will rightly be prosecuted. Because I know Billy No Mates is a schizo. Don't give him a gun, Richie. He's nuts. Now, of course, I'll get letters now from people with schizophrenia for referring to them as nuts. Of course, I don't mean that. I'm trying to make a point here. Don't mean to offend anybody. I know the guy has got problems, he's got a split personality and he's got anger issues, but I sell him a gun. I should rightly be prosecuted for that. Not the government, though. not the government. Donald Trump Jr. conspired with the Russians against Hillary Clinton, allegedly. The Washington Post reports today that Donald Trump Jr. acknowledged yesterday that he met with a Russian lawyer who had promised damaging information on Hillary. This was in June of last year before the election. This was first reported by the New York Times, and it represents the most direct suggestion to date of possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. And it is the first indication that someone from President Trump's inner circle met with Russians during the campaign. Trump Jr. also brought then-campaign chairman Paul Manafort and Trump's son-in-law and now top White House advisor Jared Kushner to the meeting. The Washington Post continues, the information isn't just troubling because it suggests the Trump campaign sought out the help of Russians to win the presidency. It also contradicts a number of claims made by the White House, the campaign, and Trump Jr. himself. Claims made as recently as this weekend. Foreign administration and campaign that have repeatedly denied contact with Russians and had their denials blow up in their faces. It's yet another dubious chapter. This is the BBC report on the latest allegations.
But the key issue isn't what Russia did, it's whether Trump's team colluded with Russia to influence the election. And that's what the FBI and Congress are investigating. Now the New York Times says they have evidence at least some in the campaign were willing to accept Russian help. They say sources have told them President Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr., and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, met with this woman, Natalia Veselnitskaya, a Russian lawyer with links to the Kremlin, in June last year, on the promise of being given damaging information about Hillary Clinton. Trump Jr. has denied anything of significance came from the meeting. Donald Trump has made it clear he didn't know anything about it. But this is thought to be the first confirmed meeting between a Russian national and a member of the president's inner circle. No doubt investigators will be keen to know more about how and why it came about.
Now, Matthew Miller is MSNBC's justice and security analyst. And he says, incredibly, young Trump Jr. might even go to prison.
I think the most damaging thing is what Donald Trump Jr. admitted to in the statement that, as everyone's been talking about. You know, it is a crime to solicit or accept anything of value from a foreign national in a campaign. Now, the thing of value has never come up in this context before because we've never had a campaign like this that potentially colluded with a foreign government. But in other contexts, in bribery cases and extortion cases, thing of value has been defined as not, it doesn't have to be money. It has to be something tangible, but not money. It could be potentially accepting information. So he's, you know, potentially, confessing in this statement to committing a crime. And I think if you're Bob Mueller, you're going to look at that, and you're going to look at the lies, the repeated lies, the changing statements from Donald Trump Jr., from other people connected to the administration, including the president himself, and you're going to realize the only way to trust what any of these people say is to put them in the grand jury, put them under oath, where if they lie, if Donald Trump Jr. has the kind of shifting statements to a grand jury that he did to the New York Times, he'll go to jail for that.
Jail. I'm not so sure about jail. To be clear, what is the alleged crime again? What is it here is Matt Miller, MSNBC security correspondent again. What is the crime exactly?
It's potentially a crime under campaign finance law. You cannot accept or solicit a thing of value. Now, usually that has been, you know, thought to include campaign, you know, donations. It was an extension of a law that was set up to bar foreign donations. But in other contexts, a thing of value in bribery cases and extortion cases has been defined not just as money, not just as something like a plane ride or something like that, but as, you know, it could be other things. You know, sex has been defined as a thing of value in some cases. So it is potentially something Mueller could look at, that this meeting is soliciting a thing of value.
Sex is a thing of value. I like sex, so I suppose it is. All very bizarre, this. Is this just part of what I've been talking about on this program for a long time now? A script in a never-ending soap opera to keep people tuned in, day out to the 24-hour news cable channels? Or does the establishment, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, does it want Mike Pence to be the president? Was that the plan all along? Get the get the controversial, the eccentric Donald Trump in and keep him there for a little bit and then eventually get him to move aside for Mike Pence? Or is it just a complete circus? I think it's probably the latter. But anyway, there it is. And finally, for the moment, a video advising UK holidaymakers what to do in the event that you get caught up in a terrorist attack abroad, by the way, has been released by the police. It's a 4-minute film and it depicts an attack by men with guns unfolding at a hotel, and it uses the run, hide, tell safety message. This is being sold today on the back of 38 people being killed in Tunisia, of course, back in June of 2015. Counter-terrorism police said there's no specific intelligence that Britons will be targeted on their holidays this summer, and the film is just part of the film. We say film in Ireland. The film is part of a general awareness campaign. Detective Chief Superintendent Scott Wilson told the BBC it was only right to offer advice following the terror attacks in London and in Sousse, Tunisia. These people are not there to steal a mobile phone or to steal your watch. They are there to kill you. You have to get yourself out of the danger zone, Wilson told the BBC today. And then he said, it's very unlikely that you will be caught up in a terror attack. This is predictive programming. It's brainwashing. It's mind control of a type. Here's the audio from the video. The audio telling you what to do in the event you are confronted with ISIS when you're on holiday.
If you hear gunshots, think about your safest option. If there is a safe route, run.
We have to get out of here now.
This is the best option. Act quickly.
No, leave the bag. Leave
belongings behind and insist others go with you. Don't let their indecision slow you down.
Please go. Leave the building immediately.
Once you identify a safe route, run. Make sure your route doesn't put you in the line of fire. Consider your exits and escape routes. If your escape route is no longer safe, find an alternative. Avoid dead ends and bottlenecks.
Oh my God.
If you can't move to safety, then hide.
If you can't move to safety, then hide. Like anybody's going to remember any of that in the 700 million to one chance that you'll find yourself confronted by ISIS gunmen while in Fuengirola or Ben El Madna or Ibiza or wherever. It's crazy. Fear, 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 fear. Keep people unsettled. It's 27 and a half minutes past the hour. It's Monday, July 10th, 2017. I had to check the calendar there. July 10th, 2017. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. I'll be back in 60 seconds.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And welcome back to it, your Richie Allen Show, of course. And thank you for the tweets. Quite a lot of tweets came in there on the N-word and on the ludicrous Ministry of Defence video. Karen says, run and hide. Ex-MI5 officer, I think, said to fight, to throw things. Last thing you should do is to get down on the floor. You become a sitting duck. That's from Karen in Glasgow. Good evening to our regular listeners and our regular tweeters. To find out what people are tweeting, just go to Richie Allen. In fact, go to twitter.com, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, where it says search Twitter. Press enter and you can see what other people are tweeting me and get involved in discussions with those people. Talk to those people. Exchange ideas and opinions, and don't be too offended when somebody disagrees with you. Life is infinitely more interesting when somebody disagrees with you and presents a cogent argument. This is Depeche Mode and Enjoy the Silence. Eric T. Karlstrom joins me next. Can't wait for him.
Words like violence break the silence. Come crashing in into my little world. Painful to me, it's right through me. Can't you understand? Oh, my little girl.
Seven and a half minutes to the top of the hour. That's Depeche Mode and Enjoy the Silence on the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, and of course richieallen.co.uk. Our guest today was on the programme about 4 months ago. In fact, he came on when he was on holiday, which is an honour. It really was an honour indeed. I think he's absolutely magnificent. And I'm going to give you his website details in a second. He's an emeritus professor of geography who taught at California State University for 30 years on the topics of climatology, paleoclimatology, landform soils, environmental geology, and more besides. He has, though, in recent years, become a bit of an expert on subjects like gang stalking, mind control, and more besides. You can find him at www.911nwo.com and gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com also. He's also a musician, an accomplished even musician. I'm delighted to welcome back to the programme Dr. Eric T. Karlstrom. Eric, thanks for coming back on. How are you?
Well, Richie, good to be talking to you again. Thank you for having me, and I'm doing fine. I'm back in Colorado. I hope our connection is going to be a little more reliable than it was before when I was in Mexico.
It's great. It's really strong, and we did have a couple of little problems when we spoke with you when you were on holiday, but like an old pro who's done many of these interviews, we got through it, and there was a lot of really important information in that. We've spoken recently again about this very, very serious subject of mind control and gang stalking. But if you don't mind, for the first few minutes, can we talk a little bit about climate change just for the next few minutes? The reason I want to kick off with that, Eric, is because this is really gathering pace now. The call to make it illegal to deny it, which is, it's staggering, isn't it? And the natural inclination should be to laugh when somebody suggests that, to say something isn't happening or to have a different belief system can be made illegal. But I've been following Richard Haass a lot lately from the Council on Foreign Relations, and he's even gone as far as to say, Eric, that in a forthcoming New World Order 2.0, if a country is doing things which harm the environment or might exacerbate or expedite climate change, we, as the international community, should be able to go into that country and stop them from doing it. This is insane. I mean, I used to believe this nonsense, Eric. When I was in mainstream commercial radio, I used to buy into, you know, we are changing the climate, we're doing it, and we should stop. And I bought into all the garbage. Recently, of course, I've changed my mind because I've seen the evidence that it's nonsense. Nobody's better placed than you to talk about this, of course. The things you've researched and taught at California State, climatology, landform, soils, environmental geology. Over to you, my friend. What's the truth about man-made climate change?
Yeah, I was listening, Richie, to just a radio NPR show talking about what's going on at the G20 meeting. And the three big topics are trade, climate change, and terrorism. Well, you know, climate change and terrorism are both what I would call foundational lies or cover stories of the deep state, which have made their way into, I think, the political discourse. And the only way that they've been able to do this, of course, is control of an incredibly powerful propaganda system. And you repeat the lie over and over and over again. What I've done in my websites, I've got the naturalclimatechange.org website, which addresses these topics. The Earth's 4.5 billion years old by our, you know, best reckoning. And for about 80% of that time, the climate was substantially warmer than present, and there was little or no ice on the planet. And what happens when it gets warmer is plants and animals thrive. Growing seasons are longer. Human beings and human culture thrives. There's greater wealth. And so there's so many lies embedded in this. But the point is that when you start to deconstruct what's going on, the intelligence agencies like the CIA, et cetera, really run the world for the international bankers and the people that are affiliated with them. And they have to come up with scenarios, stories, myths even, that serve the ruling elite and their interests against that, the interests of the 99% that assume includes you and myself and most of our listeners. So all of this basically comes down to class warfare, and how you control the resources of the planet to the benefit of the 1%. Now, of course, in my 911nwo.com website, I expose, the war on terror as a complete fraud and hoax and gigantic covert operation, as well as, of course, 9/11, which is the same. If we go back to the global warming story or the climate change story, this was meant to be the centerpiece of the environmental agenda that was rolled out at the 1992 Rio Earth Summit for the United Nations. That was Secretary General was Maurice Strong, and we were all supposed to at that time sign on to a whole series of United Nations convention treaties, like for biodiversity and climate change and whatnot, that would have the effect of changing the way the world operates, and that the UN would then, be able to kind of be the prototypical world government, decide who gets to use what resources, et cetera. And of course, the attractive thing about quote unquote global warming, climate change to the oligarchs, the plutarchs, the pathocrats, whatever we want to call them, is that if you can convince people that driving cars is destroying the environment, and that burning fossil fuels is destroying the environment, and that they have got to curtail this activity or let the UN regulate it, then, you know, then you've given up really your source of wealth. There's a one-to-one correlation between energy consumption and wealth. And so if we were to follow the Kyoto 2, phase two of Kyoto treaty, we'd phase out fossil fuel use entirely by 2050. We'd be back into a pre-industrial civilization, and our lifespans would go down accordingly. You know, it would be like going back to, you know, 1800 or something. Our lifespans would be shorter. Our lives would be much more difficult. So what they really want to do is level the playing field, deindustrialize the industrial countries, bring up the third world countries, and then enslave and impoverish everybody. So this really is the centerpiece of their environment. And it's a phony environmental agenda at the United Nations. You know, you're worshiping, you know, whatever, you know, the Gaia, the Earth, the goddess, and all this happy horse manure, you know, and and they've developed a whole religion around this, which unfortunately a lot of people have been sucked into, you know, and have been propagandized into thinking that we, you know, human beings are destroying the Earth. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, I think. You know, again, 4.5 billion years, the Earth's had a very long and distinguished history. Its species are coming and going. Sea levels are rising and falling. Ice caps are getting bigger and littler. And sure, climate is going to change. It always has, and it always will.
It always will.
And and humans, you know, by burning fossil fuels and adding a tiny bit of carbon dioxide, which, by the way, is a greenhouse gas, and it facilitates photosynthesis, which is the basis of all life. And if you take away CO2 and were to starve the planet of CO2, then, you know, you'd take away life. So a little extra CO2, in fact, is just going to make things a little greener and increase the growing capacity of various crops, et cetera. So again, if you have a scientific worldview, it's very, very, very easy to disprove this ridiculous hypothesis of man-caused global warming or whatever. But again, we're not talking science anymore. Now we're talking about a political agenda, we're talking a lot of money, which has pushed this thing. And it just keeps coming around because it suits their needs.
Eric, this is really important stuff. We've got Eric T. Karlstrom, PhD, on the line from Colorado. It's 18 minutes to the top of the hour. We will be talking in the next hour. We're going to talk about mind control, gang stalking. To stay on this theme for a minute, though, Eric, I've been, since we spoke a few months ago, even before that, I've listened to you doing various presentations, various interviews with other excellent programs in the US, and you've talked about how things were much warmer at a period in our history when there was even less CO2 in the atmosphere than there is now. And all of this is backed up by facts. And as a distinguished lecturer and academic, you always back up what you say with facts. I want to touch on, though, something that's really important. You talked about deindustrialization. You know what occurs to me, Eric? I'm Irish, but I'm living in the northwest of England. And where I live, which is very close to North Wales, so you have the northwest, you have Yorkshire, the northeast. These are big, Cumbria, of course, further north. These are big, historically big mining areas. And I'm just wondering, Eric, not just here in the UK, how many hundreds of thousands or even millions of people have been rendered out of work, unemployed, their lives destroyed by this ridiculous lie because we can't mine coal? And apparently the UK has thousands of years of coal underneath the soil, underneath the ground, underneath my feet, which would power all our needs forever and a day and all of that. How has that impacted on people sociologically? I guess the impact has been massive worldwide.
Yeah, you know, what's so fascinating is that, you know, this is social engineering coming from the top down. Yeah, obviously the elite have decided, you know, we have to put the brakes on industrialization because, you know, as more people live longer and have access to more wealth, then more people are going to get educated and learn, you know, and what they're going to find out is that all people are smart. And they know this. So they want to limit the access of third world people and as many people as possible to education and a good middle class life. So we've seen, you know, deliberate attempts, especially since Reagan was elected in 1980, to dumb down the population in the United States and to one attack after another on the middle class. And of course, the basis of democracy is an informed middle class. And if, you know, if they can whittle away at that that dynamic, then yes, then you're back into a feudalistic fascist system where, you know, the ruling elite, the oligarchs, have complete control. Yeah, and the bottom line is that there is plenty of fossil fuels to last a long, long time, even though we are taught this myth of scarcity. And I myself, having taught human ecology, you know, for 20 some years at California State University, you know, I was guilty the first 10 years of just kind of following the, for on many subjects, following what the textbooks say, you know, and, you know, the myth of peak oil and whatnot. And, you know, of course, the class was very depressing and depressed the professor, depressed the students, you know. So it's a kind of a mind control right there, you know. And then after 10 years, I started looking at the whole environmental thing from the right wing perspective, which was that a lot of these so-called crises are actually not happening, like, you know. And then I shifted the orientation of my class accordingly and changed the books that we would read and whatnot. And it's amazing, Richie, the number of students in my class has dropped off commensurately. So there is social engineering going on right at the university. If you're saying the right things as a professor, you know, then your class will be listed for this and that requirement, and there are going to be, you know, 100 students in there. If you're saying the wrong things, that will quickly get whittled down to 20 students, you know. As that's exactly what happened in my human ecology class.
That's amazing, isn't it? No, it's not amazing to me, but, you know, for many of our listeners listening to that, it takes courage, Eric, to go where the evidence takes you. It does take courage, and I'm not, you know, buttering you up. It really takes courage. The easy thing to do is take an easy life and go along with the consensus, even when it's wrong. It takes courage to say, no, the evidence is going this way, I have to follow the evidence. That makes you a real academic. It really does, you know. We obviously have had tweets and emails on this. One of the emails I've had, it's 3 or 4 paragraphs long, and I've got to look to my right to see this, but it's coming from Linda, who says, you know, whether coal and oil isn't harmful to the environment or not, it is dirty, and we should look at other ways of powering. On that, we often hear from people on this programme who talk about Nikola Tesla and extracting energy from the atmosphere that's ever present and that could power all of our needs and it could be free for everybody, which would be a massive unburdening of people, Eric. I don't know what it's like in Colorado, but here in the UK, people are paying more and more and more of their wages, of their salaries towards energy bills than ever before, and towards rent as well, of course. Nobody can afford to buy a house anymore. What an unburdening thing that would be if we could get this free energy. Do you go along with the technology must be there to extract all the energy we need from the atmosphere? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm very inclined to believe that Tesla was proved right on so many of his patents, one of the great inventors and geniuses of all time and scientists. And of course, wireless and radio and whatnot comes from his work. And much of what we probably will be discussing here, you know, in electronic weaponry and psychotronic weapons that have to do with gang stalking, comes all from Tesla's work. And he envisioned free energy for everybody. He built a Wardenclyffe Tower in Manhattan in 1919. His funder was J.P. Morgan. They got the thing up. And Tesla envisioned free energy for, you know, people around the world. It was a gigantic Tesla coil at the top of this thing. And he would beam out the energy and people could tap into it. And then J.P. Morgan, the financier, the, you know, international banker, said, I don't want to do this. You know, if the energy is free, how can I make any money on it? So they actually took the thing apart during World War II. And they have more or less suppressed, of course, that those and militarized directed energy weapons, et cetera. Dr. Judy Wood, who's written a book, Where Did the Towers Go? who was actually PhD in optical interferometry and materials engineering. She studied the over 10,000 high quality photos from the day of September 11, 2001. And she came up with the conclusion that, yes, directed energy weapons were used. And it was like a new Hiroshima in the sense that a new form of weaponry was demonstrated to the world at that time. She also concludes that, yes, free energy is out there for sure. And of course, the elite wants to keep close track of that and not share it with the majority. I think they probably have other plans for the majority first. If they were to give free energy to the poor people in Africa, pretty soon those poor people in Africa would be well educated, and they'd be doing everything we're doing. The bottom line is that we're all human beings, and we have basically the same capabilities. Down in Mexico, I noticed, Mexicans are pretty darn good at everything they try. So the whole notion of racial elitism and whatnot, this kind of flies in the face again of the ruling elite. They don't want that. Let that cat out of the bag. And so they work very, very hard not to let it out of the bag.
I've just tweeted out naturalclimatechange.us. That's what comes up. I know you said .org, but it comes up here as .us, naturalclimatechange.us. That's one of Eric's websites. You've got gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. You've got 911nwo.com as well. We'll tweet them all out. Emeritus Professor of Geography at California State University, Eric T. Karlstrom, PhD. Dr. Eric is our guest today. Delighted to have him back on the programme. We're going to get to mind control and gang stalking shortly. Dr. Catherine Horton was on the programme again recently in between the last visit from Eric. So we'll talk a little bit about that. 8.5 minutes to the top of the hour. What do you think then, Eric, is coming in terms of the sort of totalitarian, dystopian things that we can expect to be inflicted on us because of this climate change lie? What should we look out for? I mean, we know smart meters in houses, they're talking about driverless cars. Well, I mean, what an absolute, assault on the freedoms of men and women. They would even propose sometime in the near future, you won't be allowed to drive. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. Where do you see this going in terms of how they're going to, inflict things and rules and regulations on us?
Yeah, I think what we have more and more is totalitarian democracy. In other words, a shell of democracy, a shell of a functioning government. But in fact, the corporatocracy has pretty much already taken over. And the think tanks like the Council on Foreign Relations and Richard Haass that you mentioned, and they're the ones that are driving the system. For years, I've been reading about the CIA. There's a great book by Douglas Valentine called The CIA as Organized Crime, How Illegal Operations Corrupt America and the World, 2017. And, this is really the sharp point of the spear for the ruling elite. The CIA with all these covert operations has really taken over government and did so back in the 50s and 60s, if you believe L. Fletcher Prouty in his book, 1973, which is called The Secret Team, the CIA and its allies in control of the United States and the world. So he would, and this is a guy who was a briefing officer liaison between the U.S. Army and the CIA. He was a liaison for the Bay of Pigs in 1961. So an extreme insider. And he's saying that back in the 50s and 60s, the CIA took control of the government and the world. And so this is what's going on now. And of course, all these covert operations now, and all these cover stories. So once you start, going into this rabbit hole, then you start to say, okay, well, this is the cover story, like the Star Wars funding in the 1980s. Well, that was a nice little fairy tale, but in fact, the Pentagon spent 50% of the money on black budget things on directed energy weapons and that sort of thing, and a lot of this is off the books of DOD spending. So you trace it back to the sources of DOD, CIA, and then their complicit relationship with the media and Hollywood, et cetera. And you're dealing with a system that Ike Eisenhower warned us about in 1961 when he said, beware of the military-industrial complex. And now it's global. And you know, it's crowding out the rights of the individual. I mean, the Patriot Act of 2001 took away, you know, six of the 10 Bill of Rights, for that matter, you know, and they've been whittled away with subsequent laws. And so what we're looking then is the stealth, covert, sequential takedown of the great nations, you know, England, United States, Germany, et cetera, by this fairly elite group, you know, which is represented, again, by the CFR and the Royal Institute of International Affairs and the roundtable groups and the think tanks and the foundations. And the sharp edge of the stick, again, is these intelligence agencies.
This is really important stuff, folks. Huge interest in this. I'm going to read some tweets out now. Dr. Eric T. Karlstrom is our guest today. Great to have him back on the program as well. Tweeting out links to Eric as I speak. Rich Mortimer tweets, and I won't take offence at this, Rich. Tongue-in-cheek, Rich says, you should have gotten someone from the climate change lobby on for a debate. Rich thinks that I just came down in the last shower and that I haven't been making radio programmes for 20 years. Rich, we have invited members of Friends of the Earth and the Green Party and everybody else to come on this programme to debate me and my guests on climate change for years, but they refuse to come on. They won't come on because the science is not with them. It's as simple as that. When Piers Corbyn has been on the programme talking about climate change, we've invited people on from the Greens, from Friends of the Earth, as I said, from Greenpeace, from others, and they won't come on. Full stop. Millie tweets, it's funny how you can pump oil all over the planet but not water. Massive amount of tweets coming in on this. Again, to see what people are tweeting, go to twitter.com, put Richie Allen Show in, all one word, press enter, and then you will see what other people are saying. Karen tweets, they are trying to militarise the kids now. Military in schools is worrying, says Karen. Robert tweets, every time I mention this subject to my nephew, he tries to hijack it by saying the ozone layer. How does this fit into it now, says Robert. Andy tweets, General Smedley Butler knew what was going on back in the 1930s. War is a racket, says Andy as well. Luga tweets, these, and then he uses a very bad word, they want us all in mega cities, then they will strip the lands bare, rural areas, the countryside will be destroyed. Eric, do you go along with that? Do you go along with fracking, which is undoubtedly poisoning the land? Is this all about corralling us, what's left of us in the future, into human settlement zones in mega cities? What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with the last two comments you read. Andy's comment about Smedley Butler's book, War is a Racket, written in 1933. You know, here's the highest, most decorated brigadier general in the Marine Corps who after retirement saw what was happening. So, you know, everybody should read that little book. And then in terms of putting us into human settlements and whatnot, yes, UN's had a couple conferences on this subject, and that is what they want to do. You know, again, going back to this 1992 Rio Earth Summit, they tried to get passed before any of the congressmen in the United States could look at it, a biodiversity treaty, which would severely limit activities on rural lands across the country. And there was one guy named Michael Kaufman, PhD in forestry, who was able to get a map that he had put together with his little agency showing that 50% of the U.S. Land mass would be more or less off limits to the public with these kinds of draconian policies. And of course, the goal then is to get humans to go into these small settlement areas and to leave, you know, all the areas that have the wealth of the continent, like, you know, forest products and agricultural products and mineral products, etc., water, this would then be in the hands of the ruling elite. So this was a great big attempted hijack, the 1992 Rio Earth Summit. And then they had the Rio Plus 20 conference in 2012. And so the UN is trying to do a soft takeover of the world by stealth. And people like Michael Kaufman, you know, have come forward. And, when Congress saw that map, they said, no, we're not going to vote for this biodiversity treaty. But the scary thing is that subsequently all of our federal agencies, like the Forest Service and whatnot, have already signed on to Agenda 21.
Yeah,
and the other thing is Americans don't know what it is. Even today, all these years later, now they're calling Agenda 2030. And they say, you know, we've got to get this thing passed. Well, this is just world takeover stuff by the UN, one world government, fascist, feudalistic society in which people don't have any resources or power or wealth.
Right. Dr. Eric T. Karlstrom is with us. We're going to take a 60-second break, 90-second break this time. Eric, you can grab a glass of water there if you want or a cup of coffee. We'll just have a 90-second break. When we come back, I'll read a few more tweets, and then we're going to talk about the genesis of and the evolution of mind control technology. And this is getting out of hand, this, because ever since we spoke with Dr. Catherine Horton, and then Eric himself was on the program, Catherine has been back ever since. A number of people who appear to be very credible and very sincere in their belief anyway have contacted this program to say that they feel that they've been subjected to this. So, very quick break. This is the Richie Allen Show. It's the top of the hour, by the way. It's exactly the top of the hour. We're broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. We're on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, and we're also on richieallen.co.uk. The lovely Dr. Eric T. Karlstrom, incredibly bright man, 30 years Professor Emeritus of Geography at the California State University, is on the line. Lots of comment for him. We'll do some of those comments when we come back, and then we'll get into mind control and gang stalking with Eric. In the meantime, though, here's that break. Stay with me.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
And you're very welcome back. It's 3 minutes past the hour. Our guest today is Dr. Eric T. Karlstrom. Number of websites to look out for. I should have mentioned as well that Eric is a musician as well. We'll find the link to his site. We'll tweet that out as well. It's the right thing to do. He's giving us loads of time today, which is great because there are a lot of questions by you on Twitter. Naturalclimatechange.us is a good site. Gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. A mouthful, as Eric himself said last time round, but gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com, but it does what it says on the tin. And 911nwo.com, 30-year academic professor of geography, emeritus at California State University. Eric, thanks for staying with us for so long today. It's great stuff, it really is. And sorry that there was a big gap between you coming on since last time. My excuse today was, and I'm not looking for any credit or any praise, I'm the chief cook and bottle washer at this program. Now, I really do. I do everything. I do the whole lot. So I do forget stuff, important stuff. And one of the things I did forget was to get back to you to reschedule you. But thank God you're back on the programme today. I'm delighted you're back on. And so are our listeners. Loads of tweets. I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll leave the tweets for a minute. Just one. These are the damned. I love these Twitter names. Says every idea they have, they being the elite, just seems to be taking away more jobs, bringing in robots, machines and artificial intelligence. And these things, robots, machines and artificial intelligence, will replace blue collar workers. I tell you what, Eric, it's interesting. I interviewed Jürgen Schmidhuber, who's one of the fathers of artificial intelligence. And I was, you know, I was glad he came on the programme. Some of these people, they don't want to come on programmes like this because they think we're obviously crazy. You know, Richie Allen and DavidIke.com, they must be crazy. So some people don't come on. But a lot of establishment people do come on. And Jürgen came on to talk about artificial intelligence. He's basically the guy responsible for this Google Ask Alexa thing, this Amazon thing. You know, asking machines questions and they give you the answers. And what was interesting was, I obviously said to him, I think this is going to be a disaster for humanity. And these are the reasons why. But these guys, Eric, many of them genuinely do believe they're doing good and do believe that this is going to serve humanity in a good way. And do you know what he said to me, Eric? He said, I'll tell you what, Richie, he said, ultimately these machines are going to be so intelligent, they're going to leave the Earth and they're going to go and explore other galaxies. And they're not going to be bothered with us. They're not going to be a hindrance to us and our development. Now, he's obviously wrong. At least I think he is anyway. But he believes it. Has that been your experience, Eric, over the years, that people behind some of the most harmful technology genuinely believe they're doing good? What do you think?
I think that's a very good observation. I think, you know, you have some very demented ideologies here. The idea that, you know, humans are going to destroy the Earth and therefore, you know, this breakaway civilization has to go live on the moon or Mars or something. Well, you know, the moon or Mars is not going to support hardly anybody, you know, whereas the Earth supports a lot of human beings, probably a lot more than we have now. So this is an ideology. Yes, there is an idealism behind it, but it is extremely, I think, wrong. It's ill-informed. We have a planet which is provides everything we need, you know, if we just halfway responsible about our stewardship, and we can share with others. But of course, the whole basis of the ruling elite is they want it all. So you know, I think it was A.K. Chesterton, the proper study of political man is elites. So I've done a lot of reading about the elites and who these people are and where they get their ideas. And yeah, they're not on our side. And many would say that they're psychopaths. You know, 4% of us supposedly have no conscience and really are kind of a different species. And you know, so again, we need to study them, you know, in order to survive ourselves, because they now have so much power with their wealth, et cetera. And they have a plan and they've written about this, you know. So, yeah, these people, I'm sure there's an idealism there, you know, like, oh, well, anyway, that's enough on that. But yes, I do think that they have an idealism and it drives them. The idea of a singularity that Ray Kurzweil talks about, yeah. You know, when machines become more powerful than humans, when computers are more powerful, then they'll start eating us or, you know, using us as pets. And this is going to happen by the year 2030. And isn't this great? We'll all be gods and live forever and all this craziness, really. You know, this is almost going back to the Garden of Eden, you know, when the serpent says to Adam and Eve, you know, surely you will not die and surely you will, you know, be as gods. And I think the ruling elite have bought into this lie, and they don't care how many of the rest of us are sacrificed so that they can be gods and they can live forever. That's the bottom line.
No doubt about it. Folks, go to gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. We're going to be talking now for the next 35 to 40 minutes about mind control and gang stalking. Eric, as long as you've been looking into this, researching this and accumulating and gathering all the data and the information that you have on it, you must be, I shouldn't say you must be, but are you surprised at how many people now, credible people, like I mentioned earlier on, people with nothing to gain, you know, professional men and women with a lot to lose because, you know, maybe being accused of being, you know, insane or a conspiracy theorist or whatever, but are coming out saying, I believe I've been targeted, I believe I'm being attacked, and giving the symptoms, giving the scenarios that we've learned, you know, are typical of people who are being attacked. Does it surprise you how many people are coming forward?
Well, yeah, let me just kind of preface that with how I got into this. When I retired in 2011 to my beautiful little home here in Colorado at the base of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains in southern Colorado, it's quite spectacular. I live in a very small town, Crestone Baca, with about 1,500 people. Well, this town got a real injection of money and energy, as it turns out, back in the 70s and 80s, pre the Rio Earth Summit of 1992. And it turns out Maurice Strong himself, the Secretary General of that conference, was a major landowner here. And he started a foundation called the Manitou Foundation, which paid for many spiritual groups from all over the world to come here. And this was going to be kind of a United Nations, you know, with every kind of religion here. And it all just sounded really pretty exotic and cool. And but then when I retired in 2011, I asked myself the academic question that was posed by a conservative named Tom DeWeese of the American Conservative Institute or something like that in 96 when he said, Crestone Baca, Maurice Strong thinks, is the Vatican City of the New World Order. Well, this is kind of a right-wing think tank, DeWeese, and so I started researching that, thinking that, yeah, this is what academics do. You know, we take a question and we get information. We try to prove or disprove that hypothesis. Well, this turned into a 3 or 4 year project for me, and I wrote a lot of 12 parts, and I, you know, something like now 30 appendices. I printed it up in 2015. It was 1,200 pages, single spaced. Of course, I got right into the New World Order and the New World Religion, and I got into, as the project unfolded, I realized I had to get into the issue of cults and mind control. And so that really was the predecessor of this website that I have now. A lot of the information from this website comes from the research I did on Is Crestone Baca the Vatican City of the New World Order? And so in the year 2012, I looked at the history and applications of mind control. And this gets into, you know, CIA projects, which were taken on from, you know, from the Nazis, which go back to the Illuminati and the Egyptian Book of the Dead and making, you know, zombie slaves and you know, fragmenting young minds by, you know, trauma-based mind control and all kinds of rotten things. That gets you over to the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, which formed during World War I by Sir John Rawlings Rees, who's a psychologist, who wanted to study shell-shocked soldiers from World War I, not to heal them, but to figure out how you could apply the same kind of trauma to the public at large so that they could also get shell-shocked. Now we call it post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And now everybody's got it. Well, the reason everybody's got it, I guess, is because they've been trying to do it to everybody. 9/11, essentially trauma-based mind control of the public, so is the assassination of Kennedy. And so when you start to open up this Pandora's box of top secret CIA programs like MKUltra and Bluebird and Artichoke and McNaomi and McOffen and on and on and on, you realize that what's going on now is basically a continuation of MKUltra. Now, in 1970s in the United States, the Church Committee of the Senate started investigating the CIA and exposed some of this stuff. And 15 boxes of documents were found, and a State Department employee by the name John Marks wrote a book called In Search of the Manchurian Candidate. And he and his team went through these 8-10 boxes of documents about the MKUltra experiments. And by the way, Richard Helms, the CIA director, thought he had destroyed all this information, but they found Xerox copies in some room. And then you get into the 149 sub-projects of, you know, looking at chemicals like every kind of drug and imaginable, looking at biological influences and looking at electronic influences, which they've been working on, you know, since the 50s and the 40s. So what's going on now with this international global gang stalking operation is definitely, it is MK Ultra on steroids. Now we've refined it now since World War II. It is also, I think, a component, it's a continuation of the CIA's Phoenix program, which was used in the Vietnam War to target the civilian population, the quote-unquote VCI, Viet Cong infrastructure, in order to neutralize the domestic support for the Viet Cong. And basically what would happen is the CIA would develop these counterinsurgency lists, and then they'd hand out, and they would say that, you know, these people on the list, they're the bad guys, we'll call them insurgents. And, you know, they're teachers and they're, you know, social workers or they're whatever, you know, community leaders. And then they give the list to the military and the military would go hunt and kill them. You know, and John Kerry did this, and so did Bob Kerry, our senator, and so did, of course, Lieutenant Calley, and this was all exposed in the My Lai massacre. But that was business as usual in the Phoenix program, which killed somewhere between upwards of 50,000 people. And then at the same time, late 60s and early 70s, that the CIA and the DOD were doing this in Vietnam, they were also surveilling the domestic population in America who were protesters, anti-war protesters, students. Guess what? I was one of those. And who knows? I could be on one of those lists, you know, from the late 60s. They had at least 300,000 that they identified. They had a Pentagon war room dedicated to, you know, subverting and neutralizing the American dissidents during the war. This was a bit like a civil war in America because a large segment of the population was not on board for this crazy war. 50,000, 55,000 Americans were killed. 3 million Southeast Asians were killed. We never talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But they call this the Vietnam Syndrome. The Vietnam Syndrome is having the American public not on board for these wars of conquest. And so the military has been working like crazy to get, you know, to get us beyond the Vietnam Syndrome. And one of the ways they're doing it now is with this global gang stalking. We can now, they can do influence mapping, you know, identify the people who might, you know, represent an alternative way of looking at things, neutralize those people one way or the other through this gang stalking program so that they be, you know, that they're taken out, essentially, sometimes killed, sometimes changed, modified through these mind control techniques. So all of this has tremendous history in terms, which is all very documentable. The FBI's counter-intel program, you know, of the 50s, 60s, and 70s targeted, you know, the Black Panthers and killed 28 of them and neutralized that movement. Operation Garden Plot was a military project back in the 60s, which was, you know, a plan for imposition of martial law and taking out dissidents. Under the cover of we got to go after these crazy black rioters in the inner cities, we had all these riots. Well, guess who instigated those or set the trigger sparks, you know, to get going? I mean, this is all very, very Machiavellian manipulation of the population. It's called social engineering. I think if you look back at the 60s, you see it was a big psyop to get to depoliticize the American public. And but anyway, so yeah, gang stalking. In fact, last time we talked on this, Richie, I said we need a better term. And I said we need somebody clever to find some acronyms. And actually, a lady emailed me with some ideas, and that got me thinking. So if you don't mind, I'll just give you a couple terms that I think are a little more descriptive of what's actually going on.
Yeah, go right ahead, Eric. This is really important stuff. Eric T. Karlstrom on the line, exactly 17 minutes past the hour. We're getting into areas now. That this is cutting edge stuff, and it's sometimes a hard sell this to people who are very new to the independent media, but it's vital because it's happening right now. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, well, it's vital because I think there are millions and millions that are being targeted around the world now. They're not, you know, they never got a letter saying you're now, you know, in the program. They might be, there's 2 million in America that are on the terrorism watch list. They don't know who they are, and it's a classified state secret. You can't find out. But anyway, the terms I've got here are GOG's new Gestapo, global organized gang stalking, neuro warfare groups, electronic slavery, torture, and PSYOP operations. A short version of that is GOG's OP, global organized gang stalking, Operation Phoenix. Another one is USSM Scum, which is kind of a a play on INSCOM. United States-sponsored mercenary stalking cells undercover murder. And then the fourth one I'll read out is U.S. Gitmo Sitmice, U.S. Global Intelligence Terrorist Military Operation, Surveillance, Isolation, Torture, and Murder of Innocent Civilian Enemies. That's the whole point. You designate now groups and individuals as terrorists all over the world, and now the military is all set with their fourth generation warfare, unconventional warfare. They got a million names for it, civil military operations, to go after these designated enemies. Well, most of these designated enemies are innocent civilians that have no criminal record. So then they've got to, they get the laws changed, And then now you've got an enemy again. You can justify this $800 billion a year defense budget, which we have in this country. And everybody's happy as a clan. Now we have the national security establishment with many, many, many private corporate groups who are now ganged up and partnered with the CIA and the FBI and the NSA. And they're usually headed by ex-CIA people, ex-FBI guys. And now they get the contracts from the U.S. government to go after these innocent civilians as the enemy.
Eric, is there a common denominator? Yeah. You know, you're obviously a scientist. I mean, you're a professor of geography as a science. You must want to tie down a common denominator. Is there a common personality trait that is shared by those whom are stalked? Presumably, those being stalked are being stalked and harassed and interfered with electronically because maybe they're free thinkers. Maybe they have... they have an ability to maybe understand what's happening and maybe do something about it or maybe unearth something. But is there a common denominator that you can see amongst the people that you've met and that you've researched? What joins these people?
Well, for your listeners and for yourself, Richie, I would really highly recommend listening to a 3.5-hour interview by a guy named Brian Tew, T-E-W. Brian is a... worked for the DOD in Europe, and he also has a legal background, but he studied some of the top scientists on this, like Dr. Robert Duncan, ex-CIA mind control guy, who wrote two books, one of which is Operation Soul Catcher. And Brian says, and he describes what's happening. And again, I can try to paraphrase what Brian says, but if you listen to this 3.5-hour interview, he will take you up to speed on what he believes is going on. This brain-to-brain interface between conscious supercomputers and hive mind teams at various universities and hospitals and whatnot, who are contracting with the CIA and the DIA, using DOD money, Department of Defense money, and NSA science, in order to develop this neuro weapons system. This is neuro warfare, and it can be applied, of course, to the 134 countries that the U.S. is now involved in doing unconventional warfare with, destabilizing them. This is also called fourth generation warfare. The revolution in military affairs, due to the fact that we now have these invisible electronic weapons, these psychotronic weapons, remote neural monitoring, remote neural manipulation. And so it's Brian that, and this is a belated answer to your question, Brian identifies four groups who are kind of most likely to be into the project. The legal targets would be those who have a criminal record, or maybe have a drinking or a drug problem, and they get thrown in there. And then the extra legal would be, like you say, the dissidents, the whistleblowers, the people of influence that they've identified that they want to neutralize. There would also be targets of opportunity, people maybe who were MK Ultra victims going from a very young age, et cetera. Or there might be some, somebody important just to, enrolled somebody in this program because they didn't like them, So anyway, there's a number of ways one can become involved in this program. But the bottom line is this is very, very top priority in the new U.S. military. And you can go again on my website and you can look at a PowerPoint, which is written by a chief scientist of NASA back in 2001. And he's talking about using these very technologies against groups and individuals all over the world. And, they're talking in future terms like, we think we're going to have this in 25 years. But the bottom line is that when the military does that, chances are they already have that technology.
They already have it. Yeah, they're light years ahead. Yes. Listening to you last time round, Eric, and this time, How many? We obviously can't put a figure on it, but there must be many men and women rotting in jails all over the world for crimes that they committed, that maybe they have vague recollections of committing. Things that they did, they were induced to do by this technology during the rollout phase of all of this type of equipment. Of course, they've got to experiment on live subjects. And there's an evil, of course, behind these people that's unimaginable to most people. God love people. There must be a lot of people in prisons all over the world. What do you reckon? There must be.
Yes, we're talking now about the Manchurian candidate.
Yeah.
Somebody whose personality has been, you know, split into multiples subalter personalities with amnesia barriers placed deliberately between those. And then, you know, the operator of that person, almost like a computer now, could switch them from one personality to the next using certain trigger words. Then they can be programmed and triggered to commit a crime, and then triggered back into their other alter personality that doesn't remember, or their host personality that doesn't remember committing the crime. And yeah, many people like that could be in jail or could be disposed of. You know, the CIA, even back in the MK Ultra days, they talked about disposal of subjects. They needed human subjects, you know, and they had terminal experiments. And the year I spent researching this, 2012, was for me like going into the ninth circle of hell, realizing that human beings capable of doing this are very, very evil people, very demonic. There is a definite relationship between Satanism and mind control.
This is huge, and, you know, because I wanted to come to this, and I know you've been on now for the full program, and we have another 25 minutes maximum left on this, and I know that we could do hours on this, and I don't want to be interrupting your thought flow and your thought processes. But I definitely want to come to this, to the satanic. You'll know through, you know, being around, and because you're obviously bright and you do get your information from a lot of resources and a lot of sources, that my friend and colleague David Icke has been talking about this subject for a long time, and the supernatural element to it, or at least the element of the supernatural believed in by those who, you know, pursue this sort of thing. This is really important. Where does Satanism and demonic behavior, where does it come into this? How did you get to that?
Well, yeah, we're getting into some heavy sledding here, yeah. Deep waters. What got me into it, actually, Richie, is just looking at the I've got maybe 50 books here on the history of mind control that I, you know, buy from Amazon.com, and you read about MK Ultra and what was carried out, and you realize the experiments that these psychologists, this was done in hospitals and military bases back in the 50s and 60s. You know, it was highly secret, but there was funding for it, and these professors were making money at it. And when you start to read about Dr. Ewan Cameron, you know, who's a high-level Freemason, but back at that time was the head of the World Psychology Organization, the American Psychology Organization, the Canadian Psychology Organization. And here's a guy who was experimenting on people, you know, people who come to him with minor problems, like maybe a woman with postpartum depression, and her husband sends her to see this famous psychologist, and he goes ahead and puts her through 6 months of utter hell. He puts her, you know, like, okay, now you're going to be drugged up, you know, on LSD for, you know, 2 months, and now we're going to use electroshock on you for, you know, 2 weeks, and now we're going to put a football helmet over your head and repeated messages of you're rotten and you're no good. Well, basically, his whole plan was to erase the mind and then to reprogram it, you know, and this is really the whole mandate of mind control. They want to take a human being, and this is a very primitive methodology that he used, but now they can do much of this electronically. No touch torture, etc. Slow kill, soft kill, silent kill technologies. But the bottom line is they want to use you as their slave. So they want to wipe your identity clean and to give you a new identity so that you will do their will, even if it conflicts with what's in your best interest. And that's in the original MK Ultra documents. This is what we want to do. We want to get this person or these people to you know, this spy or whatever, to do our will, even if it is, you know, runs counter to their own interests. And I think what we're dealing with now is just, you know, the same thing on a much, much, much greater scale.
Eric T. Karlstrom is our guest. The link on this to go to, as I mentioned earlier on and I have tweeted it, is gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. You talked about September the 11th. We had this attack at the Manchester Arena a few weeks ago, again, after you were last on the programme. These trauma events, these terrible things that happen, and in the case of what happened in Manchester, it definitely did happen one way or another, and people were killed. What sort of effect does it have on the population generally, Eric? And is it actually physically altering our brains? Is there a physical or a physiological change when we're exposed to these horrifying, very scary, very traumatic events?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the point is to get to shock the individual so that they will dissociate from their normal, you know, cognitive state. And then they kind of blank out. And then at that point, they can be reprogrammed a little bit. So, you know, by showing the towers falling down over and over again for a series of days, this was done to the whole American public. And then George Bush could come in as the daddy figure, the authority figure, and say, everything's going to be all right. We're going to take care of this. And, you know, you go shopping again, that sort of thing, you know. And this is just the real basics of trauma-based mind control for the masses. Now, since you gave me an opening on this, I would just like to say, I think the same people who plan 9-1-1, and we can put this right at the neocons project for a new American century. It's a Jewish think tank, you know, wrote in their book, Rebuilding America's Defenses. That's their manifesto of the year 2000, saying, you know, we need a much bigger military so we can prosecute multiple theater wars around the world. And, you know, we're only getting $300 billion a year for the military. We need to double that. And the American people probably will not sign on to that absent some catastrophic catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Well, this is written, of course, a year before September 11th. But then amazingly, the year later, we have this spectacular event. And indeed, they doubled the military budget so we could fight these multiple theater wars, mostly in the Middle East that benefit Israel. But so this was one, you know, this is the trigger, the war trigger that got the American people to sign on to this project of invading Afghanistan, even though, you know, it had nothing to do with 9/11 and Iraq, and had nothing to do with 9/11. But America, evidently through the media hype, was receptive enough. Oh, we got to, you know, blood, eye for an eye, and all this stuff. It was duped, you know. But the other part of this 9/11 terrorist pretext was to ratchet up our national security establishment. And of course, immediately after 9/11, we get the Patriot Act and we get all these laws changed, which take away the rights of the individual. And then the second prong then of this same, the third prong of this same plan then is to develop this global, well, what I'm calling Gog's new Gestapo, this global police state, in which the individual not only doesn't have rights, the government is no longer protecting the rights of their citizens. They are on board. And the full resources of the U.S. government are now being brought to bear against the British government in the case of, you know, the TIs over there. You know, it's like, okay, now you're gonna play ball with us. And we're going to, you know, this person here needs to be surveilled. This, you know, needs to follow this protocol, whatever. And so this is going on all over the world now. It doesn't matter if it's a third world country. The CIA has a station chief in every country. And so we're now looking at the American empire very close to full control of a fascist police state. And I think that this is one big component of that. You got the hot wars, you got the, you know, five or six hot wars in the Middle East, giving Israel their Eretz Israel, greater Israel. And then you also have, you know, all these destabilization wars, the fourth generation warfare going on in 134 countries as of 2013. And on top of that, now you have the all of these operations against individual targets. Now, I've identified several characteristics of these operations. They are covert operations, just like the CIA has been doing forever. They involve the interagency cooperation of multiple agencies coordinated out of Department of Homeland Security fusion centers and FBI counterterrorism centers in the United States, but involving many sectors of society, including the civilians. Uses electronic weaponry, psychotronic weaponry, uses psyops, and there is the satanic element. Now, that's the most confusing part of all. But you will find, if you look into 9/11 and the assassination of Kennedy, that this, when the deep state does something like this, there is often a satanic component. Why? Because they're Satanists. That's a simple answer.
They are, yeah, yeah. Again, when I first started down this journey some years ago, these were areas I didn't really want to get into. I was uncomfortable talking about these things because of my commercial media background, Eric, you know, as well as I do. It's a difficult thing to, when you're used to speaking to an audience and telling them that, you know, there is the left and there is the right and these are the political stories of the day and this is real. When you start getting into these areas and connecting this with Satanism and the practice of satanic beliefs, it's absolutely, it's once you can get beyond that. Was it difficult for you to get beyond that? I mean, listen, you're a very credible man in society, university lecturer, PhD. It must be difficult for you to get beyond, you know, get over all your background and everything you've done to talk about these people being Satan worshipping. I'm not going to use bad language, but that's what they are. How difficult was that for you to get into that and talk about that?
Well, you're right. That is a big barrier, you know, that one has to kind of cross to understand this. You know, it's like, you know, it's like this Teflon shell kind of keeps everybody horned in. But again, if you go back into history, I just put a book on my gang stalking mind control cults.com website written in 1935 called Adam Weishaupt, A Human Devil. And of course, Adam Weishaupt is the Jewish Jesuit professor of canon law at Ingolstadt University in Bavaria, Germany, who developed this plan for world conquest in which was unrolled in May 1st, 1776, which created the Bavarian Illuminati. And within a short time, part of his plan was to take over the upper levels of Masonry, which they did very successfully at the Council of Wilhelmsbad in 1782. So they've used all these other organizations as front organizations. And he was a very diabolically clever individual. And in this short book, which is now on my website, you know, one can read his writings. I mean, you start to read these things and then you read this book and read that book and you get confirmation. And then when you look at the actual, you know, well, shortly thereafter, the French Revolution happened, which was a very, very bloody satanic affair. It was an orgy of blood in order to destroy French civilization. Then, of course, their next great big coup was the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, again with the same object. And we've seen then 70 years of hell created in communist Russia, Soviet Union. So you see the plan, and then you see the effects of the plan. You look at the individuals who are involved in executing the plan. You read what they have to say, and there are many, many of them that are, you know, writing and saying what they believe. And like Karl Marx, for instance, a Jewish atheist Satanist. You read his writings; he's writing plays about, you know, being a Satanist. Yeah. So, you know, again, if you actually can just, you know, if you have the stomach, for instance, to read the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, it's extreme evil. It is like Satan himself wrote it. But it is the declaration of war against Western Christian civilization and the war game plan. And then you, if you can stomach it, you realize, hey, this is what they're doing. This is what they've been doing since the book came out in 1905.
You know, every time it comes up on the program, I get deluged by letters and emails from people who say, oh, the protocols was a hoax. And just to be fair and to acknowledge that, I will get those emails. I'm just putting it out there now. Many learned men and women have come on the program before and mentioned the protocols, and other men and women come on and say, look, we don't believe it's genuine. But I'm just going to put that out there and leave it there. Do you know what, Eric? Rich Terrell came on this program a few months ago, and he was really keen to come back, and he's going to come back on the program again real soon. Rich is one of the big cheeses at NASA right now. In fact, I think he's their biggest cheese, responsible for discovering certain moons in space, Jupiter, Saturn, I think. Nice guy, Rich. And I invited him on because he subscribes now to the simulation theory, the holographic universe. And so I brought him on. And one of the things I asked him was, I said, Rich, what do you think? Do you think it's possible, Rich, that if we are living in a simulation of sorts, that the entity or entities that designed it to keep us, you know, to keep our consciousness in prison so that we don't really understand, that we don't have any limitations, and that we don't understand who we really are? And Rich said it's possible. So the question I ask you, Eric, because I think everything you believe and you have said, I go along with it, by the way, I don't think it's incompatible with the simulation theory. I think it's very compatible with it. And I wonder if the Satan these elites worship is actually that which might have created this construct, this prison for our minds. That, again, for many people is far out there. Feel free to dismiss that, Eric, and tell me you think it's a load of cobblers. What do you think of that as a theory?
Well, I've heard it, and to me, it seems like a projection, you know, of our present, you know, kind of state of research to the universe itself. What I can say about this persistent group that has tried to take over the nations of the world for, you know, over 2,000 years, they're very much targeting Christianity and Christian civilization. They hate Christians and Christianity with a purple passion, and one sees this over and over again. The targeting of these people, you know, kill them with a guillotine, etc. So there is a tremendous antipathy between, there's the Christ Antichrist dynamic going on.
Yeah.
I would say what we're seeing is the unfoldment of the Antichrist kingdom by the Antichrist components of society who have, you know, gathered all power to themselves. And this other thing I think is, you know, a little bit of an interesting sidelight. But meanwhile, we should not neglect the crimes that are being committed.
No, of course not, because they're very real. Absolutely right. And whether the holographic universe, which exists because we believe in it, whether that's true or whether it isn't, it doesn't take away from the fact that within whatever reality we are in, these horrendous things are happening to people. And what's happening to Catherine Horton, and I just know Catherine, really. I know you know many men and women, Eric. What is happening to them is a crime. You're absolutely right. It's the gravest of crimes. It's the sickening torture and, you know, committing great harm to people. People living in absolute misery because of these bastards. You're absolutely right. What can they do, Eric, when somebody comes to you and says, Eric, look, I think this is happening to me. Is there anything they can do at the moment?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm glad you asked that. Again, I would recommend watching this 3.5-hour video interview with Brian Tu, who seems to understand what's actually happening. He talks about different kinds of shielding. He talks about the dynamic, you know, of the hive mind teams and the clone and the super conscious computer that's using a beam of electromagnetic radiation to make a connection with the minds of the TIs. And the signal is projected then by satellite and microwave tower and small, you know, portable devices. He talks about different kinds of shielding. He says the best one is mental shielding. And, you know, do two or three things at the same time, scramble their signals, sing and snap your fingers. And see, now I can give an end to my a music website here, Richie.
Yeah.
Which may not be the greatest music
Feel
in the world,
free.
But I think it's pretty good. And that can be found on ericcarlstrom.com. And that's the only thing I'm selling is my music. And I'm not making any money on it, but I do it because I love it and because I'm one of God's creatures on the earth here. And I think that, you know, fulfilling your creative, I think truth, beauty, and love are the three transcendentals, you know, of the Catholic Church and whatnot. And I think to the extent that we can hold on to that as TIs and as humans, they obviously moving us into a cyborg transhumanist situation.
Yeah.
And to that, I say no. You know, I think God made humans, you know, the simple explanation in God's image. And I think they're only going to mess it up, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think that the human being, you know, with free will, is very, very sacred, and these people are toying with that in the most evil and dangerous of ways.
We're going to, I tell you, that's a good place to leave it. We do have another 3 or 4 minutes, but we'll end up getting into something, and then we'll run out of time. I'm going to ask you back again real soon, Eric, because this is vital stuff. I like that we have different takes on where we came from as well. It's important that we get different points of view. My listeners just tend to get a lot of my point of view. Now, I do invite guests on from all different, you know, persuasions, of course, but I, you know, I tend to be pretty straight down the line about what I think, but it doesn't mean I'm right about where we came from and why. And I'm glad that there are, you know, views being expressed by people like you, learned views and learned opinions. Do you think, I'll tell you where we'll finish. We'll finish on this question. As an academic, do you worry that, as well as everything that's going on, we're moving into this future where part of the agenda is to make us self-loving, self-worshipping narcissists who have no ability to accept when our beliefs are challenged. We're not able to debate anymore the way we used to be able to debate. We're not able to talk with people whom we might disagree with. All of this has gone. Do you think, again, that was, you know, or is one of the big elite projects to get us to become these, you know, these insular, self-reaching, narcissistic people who we become disdainful and hostile and hateful when we're challenged, which of course suits their agenda. Do you see that we're ostracizing ourselves from people just because we might disagree on minor things or whatever? Do you see this being a big problem going forward?
Yeah, and I see it very much related to our technology. You know, going down in Mexico, everybody's got their cell phone, you know, and they've got their iPhones and whatnot. And, you know, I was talking to one guy and he asked me where I live, and pretty soon he was showing me a, you know, Google Earth image of my house. And there is this notion that, oh, you have this incredible power with these cell phones. You know, you can see my house in Colorado from Mexico, you know. But I think what's happening is that we are all being kind of technologically connected now into a hive mind, which allows us a certain amount of information and power, but then sequesters us from the information and power that we need, which is, you know, the information we need as citizens to be able to make democratic decisions that are valid. I mean, most people don't know what the real issues are.
No, they don't. Folks, we're going to leave it there today with Eric. I can't recommend Eric highly enough. I really can't, and my word is not cheap either. Go to gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. Go to ericcarstrom.com. N911nwo.com. 911nwo.com. These websites are listed on the Facebook page for this program, which is facebook.com/ The Richie Allen Show. Eric, thanks for coming back on, mate. Vital information that you're sharing with people. And again, not to kiss your arse, my friend, but coming from the background you've come from, the academic institutions you've worked at, they lend a lot of credibility to you from people on the outside of this, if you know what I mean. And that's good that we need more and more people from society to come out and speak about these issues. Thanks for doing it again, Eric. The time has flown by, and let's do it in the early fall. Again, let's get you back on talking about these issues. With your consent, of course.
That sounds great, Richie, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have this little bit of extended time. I think we covered very important topics.
So we certainly did.
I'm very
today.
Happy. Yeah.
Look after yourself, Eric. Thanks so much for coming on. Enjoy
okay,
the rest
Richie.
Of the summer.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
All best.
Bye for now. God bless. The lovely Eric T. Karlstrom on the line from Colorado. Gangstalking, mindcontrolcults.com. The other websites are listed on our Facebook page, and they've been tweeted out several times today. Top man is Eric, and hugely important subject that. Like I said to Eric there, number of people have got in touch with me recently. To my, to my detriment, or it's not very nice, but I've not been able to get back to these people in great detail. But I've seen messages and tweets from people who've said, you know, thanks for speaking with Catherine Horton. Thanks for covering this. It's happening to me. And reading through sometimes the very, very lengthy emails, it's obvious to me that these people are credible and that they certainly do believe they are experiencing what it is they claim to experience. Going to take a very quick break. Back in a minute with more. It's flown by, this programme.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now. Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
You know, I have to do this program in this studio where it's right next to our house, basically. And at times I'm distracted by the future Mrs. Allen, whom I can see through a couple of different windows in the backyard, throwing toys for the jazz woman, our beautiful dog, our friend, gleefully. And Caroline can't see that I can see her from the studio, but to see her completely happy and laughing and jumping around the back garden with the dog brings great joy to me. I shouldn't be looking at it because I should be concentrating on what I'm doing, which I am. I've just noticed it in the last couple of seconds. It's a joyous thing, isn't it? It's a joyous thing. Can't imagine life without dogs, you know. Grew up with dogs. Grew up in Ballybeg in Waterford City. A terrific place to grow up. A great housing estate with, I suppose, probably a couple of thousand houses now, maybe more. And a lot of people there worked in the industrial estate in Waterford, not far from it, Waterford Crystal. And we all had dogs. And we went around with dogs. I'm old enough to remember, you know, walking around, kids walking around in groups with dogs following them everywhere. I love dogs. I love animals in general, all animals. But I love dogs. Aren't dogs just amazing, aren't they? Aren't they just the most... You're never alone when there's a dog. I mean, I produce this program. Obviously, I spend most of the day doing it. I start around about 7:30, 7:45 a.m. And obviously, I do it in a little office just adjoining the studio. And Jazz is always there. And when Jazz wants something, she comes to get it. When it's time to go outside, Jazz comes with tail wagging and head bowing, head nodding in excitement and all of that. So dogs are great, aren't they? Not the most groundbreaking thing you ever heard on this program. I don't think it's going to change your life, but they're just wonderful. And don't ever buy a dog. Don't ever do that. Go to a rescue centre and you'll have the most loyal friend you've ever had in your life if you rescue a dog. I have this theory that when you go to a rescue centre, and you find your new friend, he or she knows this. They have a deep understanding of you coming to liberate them from what might be euthanasia or something terrible like that. I think they know, and I think they're, you know, incredibly loyal. They're even more loyal, I think, than if you went and bought a dog. I don't know. Talking through my arse. Are you talking through your arse again, Richie? I might just very well be doing that. Peter Robbins is going to be on the programme talking about Wilhelm Reich, who I know a little bit about because I used to speak to a man on the radio called Peter Ind. Peter Ind, of course, if you're a jazz musician or if you're a fan of jazz music, you will know who Peter Ind is. He's a legendary bass player, the big double bass. Amazing guy, Peter. He used to come into the studio of Talk Radio Europe in Spain when I was based there, and he would sit there and talk about Reich because he was an expert. Peter is still alive. He's an expert on Reich. Wonderful man, Peter Ind. So Peter Robbins is going to be on the programme on Wednesday. We might have Ralph Epperson finally tomorrow. I've been chatting with Ralph today, and as we book guests in for the rest of the week, I will tell you about those guests, who they are and when they will be on the old programme, you know. So that's it really. You can still request guests on the programme by emailing richie@richieallen.co.uk or tweet me. I generally do see tweets during the day. I don't always answer them, not because I'm rude, it's because I don't have time. You know, I am the chief cook and bottle washer here. Simon still hasn't got internet at his new abode. If he doesn't get it soon, I'm going to drive to Birmingham and murder him so he can start doing the YouTube videos again. Our Simon went up to Burnley to see Aaron today, Aaron Callan and his wife Vicky. I met his two youngest sons, Vicky and Aaron's youngest sons, Clay and Clark, two beautiful, gorgeous boys. Had a lovely time with them today. So it's been a special kind of Monday today. Aaron is doing stuff with the Richie Allen website. It's going to be even better and even more improved. There's going to be articles on there real soon, really good, thought-provoking, hopefully, pieces. Sound like Donald Trump now. I'm going to put articles on there and they're going to be really good. No, they're not. They're going to be thoughts of the day and stuff like that. So we're going to do stuff with the website. Aaron is on top of that. And Simon will, of course, hopefully real soon, be back on the YouTube trail again. That's it for Monday's programme. Thanks so much for listening to it. Do stay in touch with davidicke.com/headlines. Do bookmark that. Listen to fabradiointernational.com. Terrific programmes there. And stay in touch with us on richieallen.co.uk. Going to leave you with some Primal Scream, I think.
Just what is it that you want to do?
Well, we want to be free.
We want to be free to do what we want to do. No problem. Right, see you tomorrow. Bye now. Thank you.
And that's what we're going to do.
Away, baby. Let's go.
We're going to have a good time.
And look after yourselves and one another. See you tomorrow. Bye.
just what is it that you want to do?
I'm gonna get deep down, I said. I'm gonna get deep down, woo, hey!
We want to be free to do